rehearsed interview with Mr. James Finch Sr. of Maysville, Kentucky. The interviewer is Lynn David. The interview taking place is on May 8th, 1987. Forget it. So who was Magnus?
Well, if you read that into it, and then we'll pick it up from there.
Okay. Mr. Finch has just told me that a Dr. Magnus T. Hopper, who belonged to the family of the Hoppers, that had the Hopper House in Mays Lick, became a famous New York surgeon. And he became friends with the Pecks and the Gages, who were connected with Woolworths, of the Woolworth fortune. And they appointed Dr. Hopper as their private physician, and he was made in charge of the Peck Memorial Hospital.
Peck Memorial Hospital in Brooklyn, New York.
In Brooklyn.
When he died, I think he was the owner of it. And all of the Hoppers are dead that I know of, except Richard Hopper. And Richard Hopper married a girl in Hudson, New York, and that was Dr. Hopper's nephew. And he more or less retired as the vice president of the of one of the chain outfits, one of the chain companies, I forget which one. But anyway, he now still lives in Hudson and has a home in Hawaii. And as far as I know, he's the last male Hopper left. There's one gal lives in Sarasota, no, she lives in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
But that's the last of all the
And
Hoppers.
That's the last of the Hoppers that I know of any place.
But they all stem from Mays Lick.
They all came from Mays Lick, yeah. And it was a fine family. And the old Hopper home is where the funeral home is now.
Where Palmer's is?
Palmer Funeral Home is now, that's right. And across the street were the Pogues. Practically all of the Pogue families died off. And across from the Pogue home were the Shanklins. I beg your pardon, the Ross, R-O-W. And he is the man that, as far as I know, started the bank in Mays Lick. And he's the one that put the signs up that said Mays Lick, Asparagus Bed of Mason County.
Where'd he come up with that?
Had one at the east end of Mays Lick on the old 68.
It's still there, or there's, you know, they've repainted
it. I think it's
it.
Still there, yeah. One of them is, yeah.
How did they come to name it the asparagus bed?
You can only raise asparagus in the richest ground in the country. And that's, that ground at one time, I think I'm right on this, I've heard it many, many times from the older people, that ground was tested by the Department of Agriculture in Washington and declared the richest ground in the United States. And it was on display at the one of the World's Fair in London and had that plaque on it. And that's one reason it's called the asparagus bed, because of the rich soil, rich, deep black soil.
It still seems to be pretty rich soil.
And also, do I?
I said it still seems.
I think so, yeah. And there were a lot of fine families around there, including the Clark family and the Robb family, the Shanklin family, and I think my family, the Finch family. Mays Lick was quite a society place at one time. It's changed a lot, like every other town has, particularly small towns. The first vocational school in Kentucky was built at Mays Lick.
Vocational school?
The first high school.
High school.
I beg your pardon. It was built at Mays Lick. It's still there. Of course, customs have changed. Everything is centralized. It's not used as a school. It's an apartment house mm-hmm. now.
How long has the Finch family been connected with Mays Lick? How far back does the Finch family
One,
go?
Two, I think I know three generations. My grandfather came, two grandfathers came there, from one from New Jersey and one from Virginia. And
which one came from Virginia?
They settled in Maysville. And my two grandfathers owned the Mitchell Finch Bank, started it in Maysville. It was on the corner of what's now Court Street and Second Street. It is not a bank anymore. It's a drugstore or a restaurant. And they were in the grain business here. And they also manufactured ropes here. And one of my grandfathers, I'm not sure which one, Mitchell I think it was, went to Mays Lick and built a nail factory.
There was a nail factory?
And manufactured nails there in a little factory.
Do you know where that was?
No, I don't. What else you want to know?
Well, all right, which one of them came from Virginia, the Mitchells?
I don't know which is which.
You don't know which is
I'm
where?
I'm not sure, no.
Do you remember your grandfathers?
Do I remember them?
Uh-huh,
no.
Either one of them? Or your grandmothers, were they?
I remember my grandmother real well, yes.
Which one?
My grandmother, Mitchell. Well, my grandmother Finch, really. My father's mother.
Kind of a lady, was she?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, she's a big, fine lady. I was always crazy about her.
Did she live with you, or?
No. She lived in the house that's there now, where, on the Finch farm. And the other grandfather lived here in town on Sutton and 3rd Street, that big white house on the corner. As I said, they were in the grain business and different industries around here, helped the town grow. But there are a lot of famous people around Mays Lick. I can't think who they are just this minute. I didn't know what you wanted when you called me, for sure.
I'm really interested in your grandmother. Did your grandfather farm that farm?
Oh, yeah. When he died, my grandmother farmed it, too, for many years. Yes, indeedy.
Would they accept a woman farming?
Pardon?
Would they accept her, or did have a...
Oh, no. She got along just fine.
Did you spend a lot of time out there?
Lived there.
Oh, you lived with your...
She friend? Did.
Well, I know she did, but did you... You visited,
yeah,
right?
I was born out there and lived in the next house up the road, going south, across the road on the White House on the hill.
The little White House.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeedy. And that house burned up, and when I was 18 years old, that's the first contract I ever had, was to build a house that's there now. Remember it real well.
So you built the house?
I built the house.
Did you build it back the way it was, or did you build it whole
pretty
plan?
Close to it. It's very similar to it, yeah.
What kind of a lady was your grandmother? Was she tall, as tall as you? You're a very tall man.
About your size.
So she's about 5'8".
Now you can describe yourself.
Yeah, I'm about 5'8".
Yeah. And down the road on the old Choctaw Road with the Glispies. And he was, a famous doctor, and I don't mean a doctor, a famous veterinarian in Kentucky.
Why was he famous?
And he got a patent on a medicine called Glispie's Easy Give, and it was a tonic and a wormer for all kind of livestock. And sold that all over Kentucky until the government stopped him on account of the agriculture department thought you shouldn't have a mixed product. And his were a mixture of different chemicals. And they wanted one product, and he, of course, couldn't do that. So he sold it to a fellow named Charlie Clark and me, and we went to Texas and sold it all over Texas.
The government couldn't find you down in Texas.
They never did, no sir. We sold it, well, for a number of years, and finally they stopped us, yeah.
Because it was a mixture.
Yeah. Sold it, lived in San Antonio, and sold it out of a factory there, or a plant there at San Antonio.
Was there something wrong with the mixture, or just that it was a mix?
Just a mixture. They didn't want any mixtures. Well, they were right in a way, because you could cheat on a mixture. You'd get a good name, and then you'd take out the expensive product and still have the name left. And you wouldn't do a good job. You wouldn't do what you're supposed to do.
So that's where we had product control.
And they were right, in a way.
What years were these?
Pardon?
When did you do this? What time?
Oh, back in the early to middle 30s. I used to work in Philadelphia, went to school in Philadelphia, and then I worked for a brokerage house there, and then I was on the stock exchange. And when the market broke in 29, I came home, and my neighbor, Charlie Clark, and I bought Glisby out. And that's when we got in that business. And we also, that year, built the Standard warehouse and started Standard Tobacco Company.
So the Depression really didn't
I'm
stop
sorry
you.
I'm sorry for all. This whole sort, but no, I can't help it.
This Depression didn't stop you all then at all?
No, we got along pretty well.
You could still find your customers and...
I'd go to Texas and travel all West Texas, all the sheep and ranch country. Still remember it and still enjoyed doing it. Made a lot of friends out there.
What'd you do, just go from ranch to ranch?
Oh yeah, sure. And when the war broke out, World War II, I enlisted in the Army and spent a little better than 5 years in the Army.
Were you stationed overseas during that
no,
time?
No, never overseas. I've been in the Army about 3 months and I was sent to Washington. And they, for some crazy reason, assigned me to General Campbell's Chief Ordnance Office. And for that department, I traveled a little over a million miles in 5 years.
Visiting manufacturers and so forth, gathering supplies for the war? Or?
No, I traveled to training stations and depots, Army depots and factories and places of that kind. Spent a lot of time with the Chrysler Corporation.
What was Chrysler doing for the war?
All right, I'll tell you the story about that. President of Chrysler and a fellow named Matt Lynch, Chrysler with a fellow by the name of Ed Rowe, executive vice president, went to Washington and signed the agreement to manufacture tanks, Army tanks, for the United States Army. So going back to Detroit, they decided they'd turn the job over to a real fine engineer by the name of Matt Leonard, a little white-haired fella. I got so I knew him real well. And he came up with this thought right quick after they told him what they had done. Where are we going to build tanks? We don't have a place to build them. No room of any kind that we could use for it. Nothing big enough. So the next day they had another meeting to talk it over. In the meantime, he said, I've got an idea. I believe I could buy in New York a used Barnum & Bailey circus tent. And we can start under that tent. They bought it, set it up on outside of Detroit, where the Army Tank Arsenal is now. The tank arsenal was built over the tent. And the tent in the wintertime had two steam engines in it, and that's the way they heated the tank, tent. And they started building tanks in about 3 months after they set that tent up. They had tools and all the equipment and engineers to go along with it, and they furnished all the tanks for the United States Army out of that arsenal.
All under
which was under an Army tent. And after about 6 months or 9 months or something like that, they took the tent down and there was the arsenal for, well, it's still there and still in use today.
For heaven's sakes.
But that was an idea of Matt Leonard's.
He was
a wonder. And later, a lot of the supply part of the Army was turned over to Chrysler to run Army depots and supply our offices, and they did a fine job.
Was Mr. Leonard in charge of that? Or?
No, Ed Rowe was in charge of all of it. Ed Rowe was executive vice president and president of Canada.
And he put it together and held it together?
Yeah, oh yeah, he did a fine job, just a fine job.
What did that Matt Leonard go on to do?
What did he do?
Yeah.
He was an engineer with Chrysler.
So he just went back to being an engineer?
Oh yeah, he stayed right there. But always, never was a time he wasn't an engineer, but he was one of the top engineers, vice president and one of the chiefs.
Yeah. So it all started under a circus tent?
Under a circus tent. Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey circus tent.
I think that's pretty ingenious myself.
They claim Chrysler researched the Ohio Valley once. I don't know why. But anyway, they had it in their research that the Pittsburgh Plate Glass Company came up the river from I don't know where, but settled in Maysville, Kentucky, on Plum and 4th Street, which is now the old Dutch Inn.
Yeah.
And they were here a couple of years, and one of the banks turned their credit down. They got mad and put all their equipment back on barges and went to Pittsburgh, where they could get financed. And that's the reason they're not in Maysville, Kentucky today, and they're in Pittsburgh for that reason. And that was in Chrysler's research.
Isn't that a shame? I mean, if somebody had the foresight,
sure,
to give them the money,
that's right,
look what we'd have been today.
To back them up, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, that's not Mays Lick, and we started talking about Mays Lick.
Yeah, but I'm always interested in anything like
it's
that.
It's in the neighborhood anyway.
Yeah, it sure is. So where'd you go to school in Pennsylvania?
I went to school in Mays Lick, and I hate to admit it, I started when the wagon was being pulled by two horses.
You and rode the wagon?
And then I rode a pony. And later they had buses, I guess you'd call them. They call them vans, buses. And I went up through the eighth grade. Then I went to Columbia Military Academy for 2 years. I beg your pardon, for 4 years.
Where's Columbia Military
Academy? Down in Columbia, Tennessee. Then I went from there to Pierce School in Philadelphia.
It was a fine school.
And I, in school, had a right good offer to work for a brokerage house, and I didn't know what to do. My mother and dad were coming up for Thanksgiving, so I'll never forget it as long as I live. They were there for 3 days, and the fourth day, they were leaving. The next morning, they were leaving. And we were eating Sunday dinner down in the old Franklin Hotel. And it took a lot of nerve, and it took me 3 days to work up enough nerve to tell my mother and dad I wanted to quit school and go to work for this brokerage house. And after I got through with my speech across the dining room table, my dad said, "That's all right. If you want to do it, go ahead and do it. Every fellow should do what he thinks is best for him. But if you do, well, give me my checkbook." And that's the last time that he ever spent a dime on me except Christmas or my birthday.
Did you have to think about giving him his checkbook back?
I gave it to him across the dining room table. I'll never forget it. That's been a few years ago.
What brokerage house did you work for?
J.L. McCormick.
Yeah.
They're out of business now, but they were specialists between New York and London and Philadelphia and Chicago.
Had you had any training for it?
Not a
in
bit,
school?
Except in school, that's all.
How'd you hear about them, or did they hear about you?
I don't know. Oh, how did they?
Uh-huh.
Well, truthfully, I don't know. Drexel and Company was the biggest bank in town at that time, and it's still one of the biggest in the country. And I was a kid in school and didn't know whether to quit or not quit. And I thought I'd get some advice. And I went up to the Drexel Company one day and asked to see Mr. Drexel. And the receptionist went back and talked to him, came back and got me and took me in. I told him who I was, where I was from, in school, the offer I'd had. "If you were in my place, Mr. Drexel, what would you do?" He gave me the best fatherly talking to I think I ever had outside of my family, and he's one of the reasons I quit school and went to work.
Did you know him before then?
Never knew him before, and he didn't know me.
But you just went to the top.
That's right.
I think that's smart. What kind of advice did he give you?
Do what you think you can do best, and what you think you like, and something you love, and I'll never forget it.
Did you ever go back and see him again?
I saw him again, yes, but not on that purpose.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, you were in New York then when the stock markets went crazy.
No, I was working for a New York house when it happened. I was in Philadelphia. The market broke on Friday, and I'll never forget, the bottom fell out. On Monday, if I remember correctly, it came back, it stabilized. And on Tuesday, it went all to pieces. I saw one major stock go from 95 down to 7.5 in one day. A little Jewish lady was living in a hotel across the street, and she went out of the 14th floor and hit a marquee on the way down to cut her body half in two. We had 5 suicides in that block in one in 3 days. Never forget them. One man went out a 27-story window. You can imagine what he looked like.
Did you have any inkling that Jew Brokerage House, was there any inkling of it coming?
Market going broke?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
You didn't pick up any vibes or anything?
No, indeed.
Anything happening?
The market went from up about 400 down to about 40 on the Dow Jones.
Yeah.
And it sat there till almost, that was 1929, October. And it sat there until about 1932. Then it's been working its way back up, and today it's up to about 2,300.
I know.
Way up.
Was anybody in Mays Lick, was your family affected by it?
Or? Were they affected?
Yeah.
Every man, woman, and child in the United States was affected. Except maybe the Rockefellers and Kiplinger and a few multi-millionaires, the Morgans.
Well, I talked to others in Mays Lick, and they said it really didn't affect them that much.
Not too much, no.
And I didn't, you know, that they just kept on going. I know, sure. My family was very affected by it.
Where'd you live then?
My family's from Iowa, and my grandfather lost, he owned a bank.
Lost what?
Lost his bank.
I see.
And you know, it changed their whole lifestyle.
Yeah, changed everybody's.
But I just wondered.
Sure it did. I'd planned on living in Philadelphia. I was crazy about the place and made a lot of nice friends there. Still keep up with it, keep up with some of them. But when the market went down, well, I'll give you an example. One of my good friends owned the Badenhausen Boiler Corporation, and they have made boilers for steamships, the United States Navy, and well, I don't know what it is. They had 2 contracts. But anyway, the old man was, father was rated at $8 million. And about 19, I was crazy about him, great big fine German. And about 1940, my wife and I went back through Philadelphia and spent a day and night there, and I called him up. Oh, was I broke. You remember the drugstore on the corner? Yes. I was so broke that I'd go down and get a sandwich, and I didn't have enough money to pay for the sandwich. They trusted me until I got back to work.
Okay.
And said, I finally sold my boiler factory, and but I'm going to get it back. Well, he never did. He died before that. But said, I was so broke that, you remember I had a big special built, $8,000 Packard? I said, yes, sir. I used to borrow it to go to Atlantic City with your daughter. That's right. Said, I got so broke I had to sell my car. I had to sell my wife's car. I had to sell my daughter's car. I had to sell my home. I said, I couldn't even buy a 10-cent sandwich and pay for it.
The family never was restored then? They never got their fortunes back at all?
No, not that I know of. He died, and I don't know what happened to his wife. She died too, but years later, I think.
Would you come back then to Mays Lick when the market crashed?
I came back.
Back to Maysville?
I came back in time for Christmas, 1929. Wasn't any reason not to. I had a little bit of cash put away, and that's about the only way I got home and brought it with me. And that's when my friend Charlie Clark and I bought out Gillespie the next year, and had just a little bit of money to do it with. Doc was short on money, and he wasn't hard to trade with.
And then you took off for Texas.
Oh, I'll never forget it, you bet.
What happened to the doctor? Did he stay around here then, or did he go somewhere else?
Which doctor now?
Gillespie.
No, he stayed here till he died. Miss Gillespie, Miss Gillespie's daughter's still out there. She's on the farm.
Where is that farm?
Mm, down on the Choctaw Pike.
Did she marry then, or?
I don't think she is. I don't know.
So it's a Miss Gillespie on Choctaw.
I'm not sure. I wouldn't know if she walked in the door there.
Yeah. You and your family have been in tobacco business a lot of years.
We started in, Charlie Clark and I built Stern Tobacco Company. Started in 1932. And my dad and two other gentlemen bought the home warehouse in 35, I guess it was, or 36. And we've been in tobacco business ever since then.
You've seen a lot of changes in the tobacco
sure
business
have.
Over the years.
I've seen tobacco sell at 50 cents 100 pounds, and I've seen it sell at $1.85 100 pounds, or a pound, I mean.
Pound.
Not 100 pounds, but a pound. This year it brought about $1.50.
What do you think about the future of tobacco in Mason County? Do you think there is much of one, or are we seeing the end of it?
Well, I'm going to compare it to liquor. I remember that a lot of people used to fight the liquor business. Well, that's years ago, and they're still selling liquor because people want it. People enjoy smoking. Some old-timers enjoy chewing. I don't think you're going to stop them. I think there'll always be a tobacco business. And to back up that statement, Reynolds Tobacco Company just got through building a billion-dollar plant right outside of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And that plant is as large as 4 football fields. And the parking lot around it is over approximately 30 acres.
I'd hate to park at the end of it.
Now they got better in the building, almost a billion and a quarter in it. I didn't say million, I said billion. They didn't have confidence in the tobacco business. They never would have spent $1 billion.
Do you think the market for Mason County tobacco will be overseas? Or do you think, like Winston?
Part of it will have to be, yeah.
That's
sure.
Where they're going to start to...
Sure.
Their new markets are going to be instead
Pardon?
Of...
Pardon?
Their new market will be overseas instead of the United States.
No, I think you'll always have a market in the United States, but I'm with Ed about like I am with the car business and the camera business and the watch business. I think we've got to make up our mind we're in a world market. I got to get out of the idea that a local United States or a local Mason County. We're in a world market, we might as well recognize it.
Yeah. Well,
we're going to sell tobacco around the world, and they're eventually going to sell tobacco in this country.
Well, you think we're going to get imported
exactly
tobacco
do.
In here?
Sure.
Where, out of South America or Asia?
South Africa. See, there's a huge market in South Africa. Johannesburg is a big tobacco market.
Right now we have sanctions against South Africa.
Oh, yeah.
You think these will eventually be lifted? And
always has been. Sure.
Yeah. You think the Mason County farmers will realize that the potential of a world market? A lot of them are having a hard time right now making it. And
I'm a great believer you get out of something about what you put in it. I think the farmer can do a lot for himself if he wants to change his habits. I'm not going to make any suggestions how to change them, but...
Well, I know some of them have been thinking about getting out of tobacco altogether and going into other crops.
That's right. They can.
But you're bullish.
Like what you were talking about a half hour ago, asparagus. That used to be a big thing in Mays Lake.
And I don't know why it isn't the price of asparagus.
It can be now, and asparagus would sell high.
It does sell high.
That's
if you
right.
bought have you bought any lately.
You bet you would. Lots of things they can do. One time Mays Lick was the biggest hemp producing, supposed to be, they said, and I guess it's right. Mason County, Mays Lick was the center of it, the largest producing county in the world of hemp. And they make rope out of hemp.
You say your family had the rope. Business.
Yeah. Well,
they bought a lot of Mason County.
We can still make raise hemp, you know. Many, many years ago, bluegrass was a great big business. Bluegrass seed. Mm-hmm. Sold all over the world. Kentucky bluegrass. Farmers don't fool with it anymore.
Why not?
I don't know. truthfully do not know.
I'm not a farmer, so I know a lot of my questions are naive.
I can't answer that. I don't know.
But you think we've still got a future? The Mason County's on the growth. The Mays Lick area, the farmers there have a chance.
If any part of Kentucky grows, the farm part of it, Mays Lick will grow, certainly. I think this town has a fine future because of the Ohio River, the railroad, and paralleled by a new highway, the AA Highway, going from Ashland to almost into Cincinnati and on to the airport.
So you're bullish on the whole county then?
Hmm?
I said you're bullish on the whole county.
I think this part of Kentucky, since it contracted and put the money away for the AA Highway, is a fine future.
I think you're right.
I do.
I have to agree with you.
It's a fine future. New bridge 3 or 4 miles down the river from Maysville.
Down in Charleston Bottoms?
Yes, in that neighborhood someplace. I don't think we need a new bridge now, but I think we will need one, I'll tell you why. This bridge up here is in fine shape. It was built about 1931 or 2. 31, I believe. It was built by the Roebling Company. The subcontractors were, I can't think who they were right now, it doesn't make any difference. But anyway, both companies, when they finished here, took the blueprints, enlarged them, and went to California and built the Golden Gate Bridge. And the Golden Gate is exactly like Maysville Bridge, except much, much larger. The other company was the Drevo Company out of Pittsburgh. They're still in business.
Is that the Drevo Lawn Company?
I assume it is. I'm not sure. I think so. But that building, that bridge out there, it took 5 years to build it. I believe it opened in 38. I'm not sure, but I think that's right. In fact, I know that's right. And there's never been any talk about building another bridge, another Golden Gate Bridge. They take care of that one, the best take care of it.
Yeah.
5 men painted from year around, one end to the other. And this bridge up here is inspected once or twice a year, and it's in fine shape. But emergencies can happen. I'll go back to any one that could have happened. About 1950, right after we started the radio station, we had 2 fellows working for us. I heard a barge had broken loose up the river, loaded with coal, coming down the river, turning in for end, and might hit the bridge. They grabbed a couple of microphones or a couple of recorders and ran out on the bridge. Thank the Lord that loaded barge missed either one of those piers. And they were standing up there like a couple of dummies with those.
That'd have been first in
those
the water.
Recorders. I don't fuss at many people, but there are two that I really gave a good going over. They could have stood on the bank and done almost the same thing. And
yeah.
If their lives, if they'd been killed, we would have been in the courthouse by their families, I'm sure of that. But emergencies can happen, and that could have been an emergency and torn that bridge down.
Yeah.
And we need another bridge close to it for safety's sake.
Just to give us a...
That's right. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Born
my mother
where?
Was born in Montgomery County, and my dad was born in Mays Lick, between Mays Lick and Helena.
What was your mom's name?
I'll take that all back. My dad was born up here on 3rd Street, in that White House next to the Christian Church. And later, he moved to Mays Lick.
When he was a little boy or
yeah,
when he was growing?
Young fella. And then my mother was born in Mount Sterling, And her father sold the farm and moved to Carlisle and more or less retired. And I don't know where they met up, but Dad used to sneak up in a buggy to Carlisle, and
that's how they met up, I bet.
Yeah, I imagine so. And they were married, and well, that's about all there is to it. Came back to Mason County.
What was your mom's maiden name?
Smith.
What was her first name?
Carrie Smith.
Carrie Smith. Mm-hmm. And your dad's name was?
James Mitchell Finch.
And you're a junior.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Some others around Maeslick went to Carlisle and found their wives. Maybe he was part of that
batch
that went up there.
A few of them did, I know.
When you were little and growing up around Maeslick, was there any people in the town that really stand out in your mind? Anybody that, character, somebody you looked up to?
I'd say the whole neighborhood is full of characters, but not any particular one, no.
What, you remember what it was like in your school? Do you remember any of your teachers, any of those that you had? Were they pretty hard taskmasters? Or?
No. I don't think so.
Do you remember the old bandstand in Maeslick? Was it there when you were a boy?
I'd answer that by saying yes and no.
What do you mean?
I'd forgotten it, but there was one there, yes. Down by the public well in the center of town, I think.
Yeah. Did you ever listen to the band play there?
I don't remember.
Were there ever any carnivals or circuses that came through Maeslick?
I'm sure, not when I was there, but I'm sure they had it there at one time. I do remember a circus coming through there once, and of course they had the wagons and a number of three or four elephants. And Dad let them water the elephants in the pond. And he couldn't get a horse back in that pond for a month because of the smell of the elephants. I'll never forget that.
When you were a boy, and growing up around Maeslick, was there a lot of stores in the town at that time, or did it look pretty much like it does today?
No, it was more prosperous than it is today. There were two garages or three garages.
Where was?
And one was right in the middle of town.
Where Elmer's is now, the one that is now, or?
Yeah, I think so. And one down in the far end of town, close to the school, and. There were one, two, three stores there that I can think of right quick.
What stores were those?
Well, Collins and I don't remember.
So, but there was a lot of activity going on in the town.
And that's when, in the middle of the store, you had a big old-time pot-bellied stove.
Where was that?
In Collins' store on the corner there. Rooksbury was on the other corner. He had one in the back of the store.
That's where people pretty well hung out there.
Oh yeah, around those stoves, yeah.
Was there a...
I remember the Robson family out there. Mr. John Clark was sitting around that stove one day, and so were some of the rest of the people. And a tongue-tied stuttering fellow named Buck Robson came in. Mr. Clark said, "Buck, I understand you're going to get married tomorrow, is that right?" "Yes, sir, Mr. Clark, I think I am. I'm going to take her and try her for a while." I've never forgotten that.
Well, I wonder if she worked out.
I'll tell you, she did.
Wonder if he did.
That's where all those little Robsons came from out there. And going down to Raymond Road, there was a little store and a meat and fish market, and an old colored fellow ran it. I forget his name, but anyway, he could do something I don't think I've ever heard of anybody else that could do it. If you'd buy a beefsteak or fish or something from him and give him a $10 bill, he could feel it and guarantee you whether that was a $10 bill or a $1 bill or a $5 bill.
Without looking?
And he was totally blind in both eyes.
You know who? What his name was?
Taylor White.
And it was out on Raymond Road?
On the Raymond Road, that's right. I haven't thought of that for a long time.
How far out on the Raymond
Road?
Right
in town.
How
just around the corner, right in town, right back of the garage.
For heaven's sakes. And he didn't have any trouble at all.
He had a pair of old scales that had a long dial on them, and he could take his finger and get the pounds off of that dial, or off that dial board.
Yeah. Was everybody in town then knew Taylor?
Oh, yeah. And he was blind in both eyes, totally blind. He was a wonder. And he knew your voice when you walked in the front door.
I wonder how he did it.
You didn't have to yell at him because the store was not much bigger than a telephone booth to start with.
But if you wanted to buy something, that's where you went to get it. It was from Mr. White.
Fish, and he had more fish than anything. Fresh fish.
Where did he get his fresh fish, you know?
It came out of, I don't know which river. North Fork and Blue Licks, I think, was right. I'm not sure about that.
Did kids fish for him, or did
there
a fish
he'd
man
buy
that
them,
came
so I'm sure. Yeah. The little colored boys would fish for him. He'd buy them from him. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then you all have fresh fish for supper.
That's right. Sure. Taylor White, I haven't thought of him in years and years. There was a good hardware store in Mays Lake.
Where was that?
Well, I think the hardware store is there now, isn't there?
No.
On the corner of the south.
Oh, I bet that's Painter's store, and
it's
empty.
On the corner.
Yeah. Was that Mr. Painter that ran it then, or was
it was somebody else? Williams.
Mr. Williams?
Williams, uh-huh. And Collins.
Oh, they ran it together?
Yeah, and there was a undertaker there, but I guess just one undertaker. We're going to say two. I don't believe that's right.
Was that Gertrude Collins'
dad?
That's
right, uh-huh.
Churches were pretty active in
those times,
too.
Yes,
weren't
indeed.
They? So, well, I appreciate your time. I'm sure I'm going to have 1,000 more questions. Maybe we can get together
well,
again.
Call me up or stop in.
Good. I'd like to, but I don't want to take any more of your
Either
time
one.
Today.